tuning into Power Athlete Radio. This week, the crew returns to answer your questions. Inquiries about training, supplementing, and injury prevention are just a few of the topics discussed in today's episode. And normally, as you all know, I'd wait until the end of the episode to promote upcoming events, but I just don't want to risk you missing out on the goods, especially since I know that most people only tune in to hear the intro. So here's the deal. Slow sucks. Slow internet sucks. Slow lines at an open bar wedding suck. Even sloths. Those guys are super slow and they're assholes. Why am I telling you all this? Because although we can't do anything about the painfully slow plot development of an M. Night Shyamalan movie, we can make you faster athletes. Power Athlete HQ's Speed Kills protocol will equip you with the technique, fundamentals, and programming to make you a standout performer. As we all know, on field, it doesn't matter how strong you are if you're unable to move your mass at the drop of a dime. Sign up for the Speed Kills program by going to powerathletehq.com/speedkills and enter the promo code, all caps, PAPPAS, P-A-P-P-A-S, to receive 10% off your purchase. And our hashtag Toes Forward Challenge is back. You know what to do? Take a pic of your feet, shoes, hooves, rollerblades, pointed toes forward, and tag Power Athlete HQ. And don't forget to tag hashtag Toes Forward, of course. In doing so, you'll qualify for a chance to win $3,000 worth of swag from participating sponsors. The competition starts September 5th and runs through the 18th, so get creative. Maybe take care of that turf toe situation and start posting immediately. Hashtag toes forward. Hashtag toes forward. All right, enough. Here's episode 171. I'm a loaded freight train and I'm right on
track. I'm smoking. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time again. Tex, why are you smiling?
I'm just enjoying a mild coffee.
It is that time again. I think you're smiling because you don't believe what I'm about to say. Are you a believer?
Believer.
A believer. Justin fucking Bieber band. It is that time again for Power Athlete Radio. It is the premier podcast in strength and conditioning, people. That's right. We have the best guests, the best hair, best shoes. What else? Best mild coffee. You name it, we've got it. And we're excited because we're going to give you a little crew podcast. This one might be the best crew podcast because we got some solid questions lined up. But Tex, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. So how long have I been here? I've been here like 3 months drinking coffee every single day. And the coffee machine is literally on my desk. And Luke just was fidgeting with some knobs today. And I see this word strong pop on.
Yeah.
So it turns out for 3 months, I've been making nothing but mild coffees.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Unbeknownst to, I guess, myself. And I'm just freaking disappointed. And it just tastes mild.
Yeah. It's because you're used to doing the bare minimum and not tinkering and finding out the best settings on things. You're the type of guy who doesn't update their phone when a software update comes through.
What's a software update?
Anyways, I mean, Tex, I mean, we haven't seen each other for a while. I mean, we've only been like on a jet, a couple rows across from each other for the 13 hours over the past 24. Holland, man. So let's talk some Holland. We just were in the Netherlands for a CrossFit football seminar. It's my first time there, Texas' first time there. Always cool to jump into a new country. We were able to spend some time in Amsterdam. Unfortunately, we did it wrong because we hit Amsterdam the day we traveled. So we're jet lagged as fuck, tired, wandering around, and then honestly just got to a point where we had a drink, we had some food, and it was like, let's go home and go to bed.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got a pretty good view of the city. I wouldn't say we completely wasted the trip. Mm-hmm. But then where we go, day two, Utrecht.
Yeah, and that's where, talk about. Yeah, and that's where right outside Utrecht was where we went and had our seminar at CrossFit FSF. And Yos and the crew there, Bob's all hooked it up, dude. So when we go on these things, especially international, like we don't really know what to do, where to go. But the experience is make or break, whatever, by the host, right? So we can go to a place where a host, maybe the decision maker or whatever isn't around and they have like a scab greenhorn coach running the facility and you're like, hey, what should we do now? And they're like, I don't know. I'm fucking, you know, I don't know. They just don't have that that switch, but
or they don't speak English.
Or they don't speak English. So, But it was great because we got food sorted and everything. I mean, the host took us out for some local delicacy, which was Dutch pancakes, right? So the pancake, like the size of a plate. But here's the catch, people. They put like cheese and sauce and tomato sauce and like meat and bacon and ham in the pancake. So it's kind of like pizza toppings almost, but in a pancake. And then I didn't, because I'm not a sweet type of guy, but people slop syrup all over that, you know? And then what was your pancake? You got like a...
I got the pizza.
You got the pizza, which was like cheese.
Tomato sauce, cheese, vegetables, and threw a little bacon shigisha in there.
Yeah. But no, it was sick. So we actually had a question on the, you know, what do we think of the Dutch, right? So let's see. Let's pull up the exact question here, Tex, and I'll let you go ahead and read it off.
Here we go. This is from CJ Goad. We know John's opinion on the Norwegian guys, but since you guys just got back from Holland, what do you think of the Dutch folk?
Well, they're fine. Everyone was kind. A lot of the English speakers, so that always helps because we're ignorant assholes and don't know anyone else's language. This is actually, I realized the first trip that I didn't figure out hello, well, hello,
hello. But
like any sort of casual greeting and thank you in the local fucking tongue.
Well, we weren't forced to.
Yeah, but still, it's just an act of good faith, I guess, or like, you know, being a considerate guest in someone's country. But interestingly enough, where we saw a disconnect was in just our platform of presentation at the seminar and preparing people to deal with a client base that we would refer to as the performance whore. The person who plays sports, they're using the training as a vessel. They want to get better. They want to outperform the opposition. And there are people within that psychographic that will do it at all costs, right? So this is one of the things that our boy Thad was talking to us about, is just kind of a slight disconnect in the culture between American sports and some other countries and the mindset of sports in Holland.
Yeah. So whenever we do those little tests, whether it's from our isometric holds or just kind of some leadership, some team building stuff, you know, almost we had to over explain what to do. They didn't have the set expectation. If we were asking for leaders, everybody's looking around for the next guy, or I don't know if they know what the definition of a leader is, but
right.
So, and then, yeah, Luke had to play bad cop, give him a little introduction to what America is all about.
Yeah, if you're going to quit, we talk about, you know, you tolerate that stuff in your gym, you're doing your athletes a disservice. That is always a message we have to deliver at the seminar, because we understand, listen, you people who are coming to this seminar or have been, like, I know what it's like. You go there, it's kind of a little vacation away from being the coach. You get to get coached, right? And you want to have fun. And we do certainly hit the birthday party vibe. We have a lot of fun. But just because you're on vacation and you're having fun doesn't mean you get to take a play off. So just like any coach would, break a boot off in your ass, right, Tex?
Size 9. Coach Atwood.
If you take a fucking play off at the seminar, you're going to hear about it. And everybody has that moment of weakness. And somebody is always will always be made an example of. And typically everybody's a good sport because we bring it back full circle and we build you back up. And it truly changes the pace and the tempo of the rest of the practical session, wherever we have to break it out. If it's in the sprints, if it's in change of direction, if it's in our ISO stuff, if it's in the warm-ups, if we break it out, the tempo is shifted and people get into it, right?
Yeah.
So
And this is an opportunity I enjoy every single seminar, because we meet a lot of coaches and I hear a lot of coaches complaining about their athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, this is going back to like an old Ralph Ruiz quote: you can either dumb down a program or you can start coaching your athletes up.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of complaining about their attitudes, why don't you put some pieces in place in which it kind of creates or drives the appropriate attitude or culture for your gym? So it's kind of that hello, and it was definitely an awakening for all of our attendees there.
Yeah, and I think they, in terms of cultural shock, like that might not be a very Dutch way to communicate how we decided to. You know what I mean? Like firm and, I guess, I don't know, fucking being an asshole, right? Being, you know, good cop, bad cop. But we always like to expose the attendees to that side of coaching, and that you have to, everyone, you know, one of the hardest things to do as a coach is be the bad guy. And I tried to tell this every seminar is you have to tell your athletes they're not doing a good job or they're doing it wrong, but it's up to your creativity and how you know to coach this athlete on how you want to hit it. Like, is it, I'm not saying negatively reinforce your athletes, cause I know that doesn't work. One of my best friends and I got in a debate over this. I'm like, listen, man, I'm a negative reinforcement guy. He's like, you just think that everybody responds to positive reinforcement. He's a big, you know, psychology guy, sports psychology. And I truly don't think so. I've been positively reinforced. I respond well to negative stuff. But there's a way to positively empower your athlete and bring awareness to that they're not doing a good job and they should be doing better. And it's hard to verbally expect more out of your athletes. It's easy to say they're doing great and put them on a pedestal, but it's hard to break them off and take them to that place they can't take themselves. And that's like the whole essence of being a power athlete coach, right? So, I don't know, Tex, if you want to go more into that.
I mean, we got some pretty good questions. We got a lot to get to.
All right, shall we barrel forward?
Yeah. So what I want to kick us off with here is one of the first questions we got from Justin versus Tacos.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great name.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so he asked us, how do you avoid hamstring pulls when sprinting? And so this is all going to come down to, it also combos almost with another question we had, a posture and position, so we can build up to that.
Mm-hmm.
But avoiding hamstring pulls during sprinting, that's going to be technique. Absolutely, mechanics 101 is going to be properly sprinting and putting yourself in optimal position to, one, go fast, and two, resist injury.
Mm-hmm.
So
assuming that there's a warm-up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Well, I always assume that people do warm-ups, right?
Well, you know what they say when you assume?
Everyone else is an ass.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's just hop in technique. In terms of technique, now assuming you're going through all of our prep sequence, our warm-up sequence that we offer in our sprint program, and anytime we program sprints in Field Strong, you're going to see a sprint warm-up sequence. So just assuming you're going through that. So the number one way that people are going to tear their hamstring during sprinting is going to be a loss of horizon. So now I want you to envision kind of just standing straight up as tall as you possibly can, not moving. And I want you to lift your chin up. So that is a change of horizon. Your vision changes. And we often see this during people's deadlifts over stress or the 1,000 pull-ups that we see at our seminar that are incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you lift your chin up during squat, deadlift, pull-up, that is also a change of horizon. So now imagine sprinting. You are sprinting all out for 40, 60, 120 yards, whatever you got on deck, and you start to fatigue, and you default to your lifting of your chin.
The strain response.
The strain
I'm
response.
I'm straining so much that I'm reaching for whatever the fuck you're reaching for, and you don't even know you're doing it.
Yep. So that changes your horizon. So your posture now is going to tilt backwards with that chin going up. And so ideally we're trying to keep our foot underneath our hips in that knee up toe up position. So we're really pushing into the ground, driving and propelling ourselves forward. But then when you drift backwards in your posture, your toe, your foot, it starts to drift out from underneath your hips. And instead of that knee up toe up position, you're really starting to kick out. So you're almost trying to grab the ground more with your hamstring and really pull yourself forward versus pressing into the ground and propelling yourself. So when that toe starts to get out in front of that knee after the chin lifts up and the back tilts backwards, then you're just putting too much stress on your hamstring, and that's where we see the pulls, the tears, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something to keep in mind with kind of that straight ahead speed. And then we definitely, if you start to really reach that foot out anytime and change direction, that's when it becomes not a hamstring pull or a tear. It's going to be kind of a knee injury.
Knee tweak.
Yeah, knee tweak, because the hamstring didn't do its job.
Mm-hmm. So just in what I want, going back into that, not only is the chin reach a product of you falling to the level of your training, but so is, we talk about just skill transfer in your squat, your step, your lunge, right, Tex, in terms of, yep, replicate the 3 points on skill transfer, internal, external structures, and muscle action. If you're the muscle action you're replicating in those lifts, in the step-ups, in the lunges, is the muscle action in sprinting, right? So you're preparing, you're learning how to sprint without sprinting. essentially. Yeah. And the idea behind replicating that muscle action is these movements become habits, proverbial defaults, where right now a poor default during a strain would be elevation of the shoulders in reaching the chin, which we see people do on deadlifts, which we see them do on pull-ups, the aforementioned movements we were talking about 10 minutes ago. So simply put, not doing that shit while you're training will help with your fucking hamstring pulls and tears.
Yeah.
So
easier said than done.
Yeah, totally. I understand that. Absolutely. But that's where the time should be spent mm-hmm. in your training. Everyone's spending so much fucking time getting from point A to point B, blasting heavy weights, putting numbers on the board, force production, and they're not working on alignment.
Yeah.
Right. So alignment is, this could maybe be our segue to the second question.
Yeah. No, not yet. We got a lot to cover. We're still with sprinting.
Okay.
So Luke said that mention of force production. That's a lot of time we're lifting weight. And then your pull, your tear, that is your muscle, its inability to dampen, be a dampening spring. So it couldn't reduce that force. So how we can affect it, guys, we said not doing reaching your chin, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that's Luke's favorite coaching go-to is telling you not to do something. But let's put you in a position to do something. And so how I want you to fix your hamstrings is we're going to introduce kind of how to step up. So it's the forgotten primal. And fortunately, this week we got a video coming out teaching you how to perform a step up. So this is a crucial part of not only our speed program, our change of direction program, but all of our strength and conditioning programs from CrossFit Football to Field Strong to Grindstone is teaching athletes how to step up. And it's going to bring the attention back to your posterior chain. So muscle stabilization, you're relying on your hamstring to really pull that action and perform that step up. And then it's going to program your body how to pull properly when it comes to sprinting and not overextending and relying too much on that quad. So some limiting factors, guys, that we see on the step up are simple as this. One, lack of application. So people do not include it in the programs. And then the people that are doing it on programs, lack of proper execution. So this is everywhere from foot placement to kind of loading the hamstring, opening up the hips, and attacking all the limiting factors that prevent you from running and sprinting. We can correct those with the simple movement and application of a step up.
There you go.
Yeah. So, guys, keep your eyes out for that article, that video that kind of break all that down. Mm-hmm. And then this is how we need you to step up from here on out, which should then carry over to your sprinting and then not doing all those things that Luke talked about.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess going back to the warm-up and going back to skill transfer and connecting the step up as well, all of this stuff, the reason we're giving you this particular sequence of warm-ups in the speed program, we're expecting proper execution. Proper execution comes back to skill transfer and transfer and training. So we're resetting your default with these movements. We're giving you all these opportunities and all these reps so that eventually they become habit. But you need to really understand that. And some of the people who go to the seminar, they eventually get it, right? They pick up on it. You don't know what you don't know. Essentially. Yeah. So a good way is, you know, if you're following that speed program and you're watching the movement demos associated, because all the demos have linked, or all the movements have linked movement demos, pay very particular attention to how the body is aligned, how the legs are aligned, the knees are aligned, joint alignment, kinetic alignment, pay close attention. And the expectation is you're doing exactly that movement. And you'll see in the step up video that we put together, you're going to see what we're talking about.
So let me just a quick build and kind of how we learn. So this is something that I had opportunity to present at 2015 Power Athlete Symposium. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I introduced. So I went to school for health promotion. It's a lot of health promotion behavior change models. And one of the ones that I picked up and held onto as I got into strength and conditioning was called a competency model. So much like people pick up or change behaviors like smoking and nutrition and kind of health related stuff, it's the same way that we take on coaching and learning. So simple breakdown, first stage of this is going to be called unconscious incompetence. This is where an individual does not understand or know how to do something, but they do not even appreciate the coaching or the advice that you're trying to give them. They ignore you, they write you off, or they assume, hey, I can step up. What does this guy know? Because we get fucking technical with even the simplest lifts, so that way we put you in a position to execute. But, I mean, we sometimes get this at the seminar, and I know all the coaches out there have had one athlete that just writes you off, is not going to pay attention. What stage he's in is currently unconscious incompetence. This eventually, once you break him down or make a connection or, you know, coach, leads to conscious incompetence. This is where you're going to experience a lot of athletes, whether they're in high school, CrossFit setting, or kind of those freshmen in college. This is when the individual does not understand how to do something, but they're putting conscious effort towards proper execution. So once we put out the step up video and you kind of break it down and watch that kind of steady thought process as you're executing it and trying to do it properly as you witness in the video or read about in the description, that is going to be conscious incompetence. Finally, when you start to actually pick it up and execute it properly, you enter conscious competence. This is when you understand how to do something, but you must turn your mind on and execute it properly. And if you're not thinking about it, you don't execute it properly, which then eventually leads to, once you get through that, guys, it's going to be unconscious competence. And this is, you don't have to think about the movement. You can really overload and stress that movement pattern, go as fast as you fucking can, but you're still executing it as if you're thinking about it, which when we're working with field, court, rink sport athletes, this is what we want to gradually build up towards. So it is a process of development, a learning curve, but I mean, we do this with all of our primal movements. And then that eventually leads to, hey, just go fast, and they're able to seamlessly and effortlessly combine all those primal movement patterns through space to perform, you know, what are those things?
Novel tasks?
Yeah.
That's a good definition for athleticism.
Sounds like it. So, I mean, once you get on that speed program in the 8 weeks, it's almost inherently built in.
Right. But then jumping into posture position?
Sure.
So, as we're talking, as Tex, you go find through and find the sucker, as we talk about, you know, proper execution and resetting the default, what we're talking specifically about is basically joint alignment and trunk position relative to hip action, arm action, right? So this is a concept we often refer to at the seminar as posture and position. So, Tex.
So here's a question from T-U-P-K-E-S, Tupkes. Tupkes. All right. Can you expand upon posture and position as discussed in the cert? You cover primal movement patterns a lot on the podcast, but don't talk as much about power athletes' philosophy on posture and position. I really like the idea of how in sport we are actually always fighting to get back to proper posture and position, and how practice in the gym leads to execution on the field.
You want to lead us off? All right, so sure. Posture and position is really an element of what we would call body awareness, right? So understanding, it goes through the same competency model Tex just took you through, but when we talk about posture and position, we typically are talking about best replicating the universal athletic position, which is a bilateral stance. We have, if you go look at our seesaw walk promo or demo on Power Athlete HQ, Callie and I introduced that universal athletic position and then eventually go into a lightsaber war. But that's a fact. Posture and position is going to be challenged in any strength and conditioning program using a barbell. Or adding any stress, right? External elements like a barbell, a dumbbell, kettlebell, center mass bells, chains. And then we're going to add stress outside of just load and implements in a couple other ways. The next form of stress is going to be plane of motion. So it's maintaining posture and position in line of action through different planes of motion, our sagittal, frontal, and transverse. Now, how do we layer on even more stress to those two forms of stress? It's by elevating the heart rate, fatiguing you, or asking you to accomplish those same exact tasks under fatigue. But our goal as a coach is to take you to the boiling point, but not that breaking point. But that's just going to be impossible. You're eventually going to hit that breaking point. But we want to break you in types of movements that are not going to hurt you. So the best place to do that is going to be our isometrics, our body weight isometric holds and stuff like that. And seeing you fall apart and those types of things, our pillars, our Captain Morgans, our side pillars. And then the best way we know to challenge that universal athletic position is with the barbell back squat, which is why it is the center stone movement in our program, right? And then when we talk about proper line of action and transfer and training there, that's a whole other story that, you know, I guess we talk about at the seminar.
Yeah. And so this was the concept of posture and position. It was the aha moment when I first attended the seminar way back in 2009. So how John presented it was body awareness, and the responsibility of him as a guard and a tackle was to maintain his posture and position. So if a defensive lineman was able to change his posture or take away his position on the field, or the way that athlete was moving around him caused him to lose his position, he failed. So loss of position could cost the, you know, the running back the play or the quarterback the opportunity to pass the ball and make a play. So how I took that is I played defense lacrosse in college. So if I lost my position on the field, it messed up our whole defensive scheme and package. So making that performance perspective connection for me and kind of John's presentation, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And where do we see in the lift? An external stress and all the stress Luke just mentions, the opportunity to challenge our athlete, put them in a position to fail and lose. So that way it's in a lower stress environment than practice. But they create the mentality of I'm going to fight for posture and position underneath a bar, or as I'm moving through space, which then carries over to the field in practice. I'm fighting to maintain my posture and position against my teammate, my current opponent. And then coaches see that, then it leads to more opportunity in game day because they're more reliable in maintaining their posture and position. But it all trickles back down to preparing that athlete for the demand of fighting for posture and position in sport. So we can even get further into this because we always stress perfect posture position, that dead bug setup in all of our lifts. So guess where sport is played though? You're always going to lose posture and position on the field. It's played at this imperfection of movement. So what we're trying to do then with training is increase our athlete's margin of error. So we take a two-step approach to this. First is putting our athletes in a position to decrease the amount of time that's spent for them to correct and reacquire posture and position. We want to speed that process up almost because it happens at an instant on the field. So imagine a third baseman, for example, on the hot corner, gets a freaking ball thrown right to him, takes him out of his perfect posture and position. We want to decrease the amount of time it takes for him to get set up and make the play at first. Second perspective is going to be the accuracy of the calculation that the body makes at the joint's position from the information it receives at full speed during a game. So keeping the third baseman as the example, again, freaking ball hit right to him, but we're working against Ichiro or some speedster on the way to first. He doesn't have time to accurately get set up and make the play. So what does he do? At an imperfect posture and position, his body has to respond just as lightning speed to throw and be accurate with that pit with the throw to first in an improper position. So when we're in training, we're trying to overload and challenge and enhance an athlete's ability to maintain posture and position at overload. But we're also putting them in a position when we introduce our form of conditioning, that multiplanar change of direction approach, to then have accurate calculations and speed up their recovery back to it. So we're trying to simplify it, guys, but then when we really get down into it, if you looked at our programs, you'd be able to see this stuff, but then piecing it together, you must be smart and intelligent so that way you don't put your athlete in a position to really kind of fuck up their coordination or their accuracy or anything.
But, I mean, as a just an overall rule.
Golden rule.
Yeah, do no harm and, like, understand – train your coach's eye to understand what a good posture and position is.
Yeah, we also use this line a lot. This is old Charlie Francis approach. If it don't look right, don't fly right.
But the adaptation is, if it looks weird, it is weird. Or better yet, if you're an athlete, slow down when you're moving, or not even slow down, but keep going fast, but slow your thought process down and ask yourself, does this feel weird? Because if it feels weird, it is weird, right? So. Tex, what do you want to pop to next?
I was in the zone. I wasn't even reading.
Oh shit. So why don't I'll pick one real quick. Thoughts on LSD, long, slow distance training, specifically running, and how to combine it with grindstone, repeats versus steady frequency, etc. Training for 1.5 mile run for a fitness test at work. And that's from my boy, Fat Bastard 123. I mean, gotta love that name. But so dudes following grindstone. Grindstone's our program for, I guess, the busy professional, right? It's partitioned into two mandatory training days, which are your heavy volume days. You have two recommended days, which are your medium days, and then your two optional days. I guess, you know, and you, backing up, if you're following that program, then you align the training throughout the week so you can tackle it as best you can, right? So what we're looking for is you to find your two training days where you can put in the best efforts. And I guess what I would do is I would add my runs to my optional days, right? Or my recommended days. So I wouldn't compromise the training intensity of your mandatory days. What I would do is just fucking go run 1.5 mile runs until you get your time and always go as fast as you can. I mean, I don't know how much time this dude has, but the one thing...
I would set a goal time. Mm-hmm. So I believe if you're taking a test, then they have a set standard, whether it's 14 minutes. In college, we had a 9.5 minute. You had to hit a mile and a half in 9.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So approach you could be is set your goal time. So let's just compromise and say you want to run 10 minutes. So it's 10 minutes to hit your mile and a half. Well, on that day that you hit running and training, you could just go jog or go run for 10 minutes.
Warmed up and everything though.
Proper warm up. Go run for 10 minutes like you're taking the test. See how far you get.
Yeah.
And then always take that 10-minute approach so that way we're never taking away from, I mean, the grindstone training, but you're also preparing for your test
mm-hmm.
without neglecting any other of, you know, the stuff that matters.
Now, as you look at the, that we feel matters, but as you look at this stuff, this is a considerable amount of volume to your training, right? I mean, and this volume will affect your ability to perform potentially if you're stacking it before your mandatory day. So let's just put a scenario out. My mandatory days are Tuesdays and Thursdays. If on Monday I'm going for my 1.5 mile run or my 10 minute variation of the run, that's going to affect my Tuesday training and vice versa. So I guess what I would also take into consideration, give yourself a day or two before your mandatory days to get this stuff in. So that's how I would pair it in there. In terms of like repeats versus steady frequency, et cetera, for 1.5 miles, like, and I don't know how high the standard is on this thing either. I think you just kind of get after it and you go and you go and you go. It doesn't have to get that jiggy. You know, when you get into like the repeat stuff and kind of get real jiggy with it and sexy with it, that's when you've, is there like what we would refer to as our base level of strength. Like you just got to kind of linear progress. And then as you plateau, that's when you get jiggy with it. I'm guessing that this fucking fitness test isn't like a world-class time these guys are looking for. And I think you could really just get it with proper warm-up in a couple days a week. Smashing the distance stuff.
Yeah, and staying healthy.
Yeah, stay healthy.
Right? You get hurt training for the damn test.
Now, we're going to go ahead and shift over to a little nutrition theme here. And I've decided to phone in a friend because Tex and I, while I know enough to be dangerous and Tex knows nothing, I've got Leia K and I've got Tyler on the phone here. They're our nutrition team. What's going on, guys? What's up? So, Leia, you just saw Sausage Party? Hang on.
I did.
I need an update.
I did.
And?
Dude, it's hilarious, but it's fucking terrible sometimes. Don't go see it with, you know, relatives that you might be embarrassed to see it with.
So not my parents. Did y'all ever see movies that were, like, fucking sexually driven with your parents? That was always awkward.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I saw Summer of Sam one time with my dad, and there's some really weird sex scenes in there, and that was awkward.
Basketball, American Pie 2. I mean,
yeah,
American Pie 2 with your parents.
It's the only way I could get in.
Oh, Tex, dude. My earliest, like, rated R moment that I can remember watching and my mom being, like, yelling at my dad, like, "Red!" and coming and slapping her hand on my eyes was fucking Top Gun.
What?
Yeah, dude.
Where, the volleyball scene?
No, take me to bed or lose... You big stud, take me to bed or lose me for the volleyball scene. Why did that take 5 fucking seconds to, like, calculate? But, no, that movie looks legit. Tyler, what's going on with you, man?
Not a lot. Just some clients today busting out some new blog info. Another day.
Yeah. Well, but I'm just going to start with a question that all of us could participate on, and I'll give you my personal thoughts. What is the most powerful food between pizza or donuts? Who's going first? Ladies first. Leia, what's up? What are you thinking?
Pizza. Because you can put meat on it.
Yeah. Well, you can put meat on a donut, theoretically, right?
I actually have had a bacon donut once, so I guess that's true.
I'm going to go with you on pizza, because let me tell you something. I'm not part of, like, the donut bandwagon.
Yes.
Like, you know, and Tyler, I love the quote that you put, like, you combine coffee with donuts, you got an apparel line. Like, I just, the donut thing, you know, I don't know. I can remember eating them as a kid, and I just don't really dig on them, man. But I will smash some pizza. And candidly, like, I prefer a meatza pizza, kind of like the crustless style. You know, where you get like a sausage-based crust and then throw some toppings on there.
A sausage party?
Yeah, sausage party all day.
So I think we should start a new clothing line. You ready for this?
Okay.
Palloff Press and Pizza. Pizza is the untapped clothing line. Everybody does donuts and deadlifts and all that other shit, but nobody does a Palloff Press.
we'll have a description on the back.
This is why you're not in charge of marketing.
It's available on Instagram. I'm getting it right now.
So what are you saying, Tex, pizza or donuts?
Definitely pizza, because that's how I like my pancakes. In Dutch.
We were talking earlier, in the Netherlands, pancakes is like a local delicacy, or like one of their specialties is pancakes every day. And they have them for dinner, but they put like meat and cheese and sauce and everything on there. So it was killer. But Tyler, what are you thinking, donuts or pizza?
Definitely pizza. I've never been a huge donut fan. I don't get the hipster craze. It's like bacon was several years ago, which I could get behind, but donuts, give me a break.
All right. Well, let's get into like some fucking why I called you guys on. So we got a question from Phil Sal. Do you guys recommend taking any digestive aids to improve digestion while following the nutrition program? So, I mean, I guess it depending on whether you're on the leaning protocol, I mean, maybe differentiate if you're on leaning or keto or the bulking or performance maybe. So I don't know who wants to take this one or to start.
Well, I think a lot of people need digestive aids, but the problem is that it's something that's kind of hard to just hand out because there's a lot of different kinds. So there's digestive aids that help with do you have low stomach acid? Or there's digestive aids that help if your pancreas is insufficient or if your gallbladder is insufficient. So from practice, I think a lot of people could benefit from some type of digestive aid, but it really takes some testing to figure out which one you would want to take or need to take depending on who you are. I don't know, Tyler, what you...
Yeah, I'm with you on that, but I'll also add that a lot of the problems I see with people that are having digestive issues that are following our plans or really any change in health, like a plan derived for that, is they're just not eating enough fiber. Like, they're not getting vegetables. They go to an all-meat, carb, and fat diet, and they're completely bastardizing the Roy G. Biv principles of you know, eating colorful veggies at their meals. You know, so a lot of times I think they could combat it with just, you know, adding more veggies into their food. But beyond that, yeah, it depends on what your exact digestive issue is.
So why do you think this guy's asking this? Like, what are signs that you might need digestive aids?
I think a lot of people get bloating and like gas and stuff sometimes when they change their diet, or just in general, a lot of people kind of suffer from things like that. So you've either got like food sensitivities that you don't know you're dealing with, or you've got some issues with digestive aids, or like a lot of people have been put on like acid blockers because they have like reflux and stuff. And so their doctor puts them on acid blockers and then it kills the body's ability to produce stomach acid well. So then you, when you eat certain foods, like you can't break it down fast enough. So I could see how that would be a common complaint, like bloating, gas, just that fullness. And the guy wondering if maybe digestive aids would help him. That's usually what I see.
And then what, so Leah, would you, like you said, kind of take some experimenting. So it would be something like, you know, get a relatively consistent diet that is, I guess, like put something together that has a, is relatively inclusive of like our eat with abandon stuff. Right.
So, right. You,
and then get like a good, I don't know, get like a fucking good cadence going, maybe like a 3-week cadence of varied foods, and then see if any specific food is triggering it.
Yeah. Elimination diet. I mean, if you follow any of our protocols and we pull out, you know, most of the inflammatory foods, a lot of times people's issues will resolve themselves, especially like dairy can be a big one for people that causes a lot of like bloat, gas or whatever. And so they pull it and they feel better and mm-hmm. they add it back in and they feel worse. So that is the first step kind of. And then after that, you know, you can kind of, or even like Tyler said, even if you pick our plan, but then you don't really follow the adding enough veggies, you're like, well, I got my meat, my starch, and I'm not eating inflammatory foods. Mm-hmm. So throw in adequate fiber. And if you still got issues, then maybe kind of look at digestive aids.
Yeah. So then you go through that, that iteration of each type of aid for a couple of weeks and see if that does it. And then you start to target in on what you're looking for.
Yeah. Or I tell people to start like really basic. A lot of times we'll just start them with some like pepsin HCL or something like the stomach acid stuff. And then do more, unless they've got some issue. Like if you had your gallbladder removed, then yeah, you're going to have problems digesting food, digesting fats specifically. So there's certain foods, digestive aids for that. Just depends on what your particular deal is.
Cool. And then let's try and jump on this one here. I'll let you guys kind of handle it. This is from CrossFit Catal. What is your guys' take on all of the multi-level marketing supplements, i.e. Plexus, Limo, Advocare, Crescendo, et cetera? And then I'll give you the second part here too. We give a nutrition class once a month and a lecture the nutrition template from CrossFit Football Power Athlete, which is basically, all right, spoiler alert, you know, eat nutrient-dense foods, don't eat grains and anything else that is like has poor nutrient density or damages your gut. Select fats with monounsaturated, saturated fats with good fatty acid profile, like your animal fats, your coconut, your butter, olives. And then, you know, don't be weird and have solid balance and try to eat every color of the rainbow every day, right? Is that the lecture basically, guys?
Basically.
so that's what they're telling their people, right? And then basically it's hard enough to get most people's head that you can't out-supplement a shitty diet. And when I'm approached at the gym about carrying some of the products, I politely decline. So I think he's in the right headspace, but I'll let you guys kind of take it. I mean, Tyler, you popped off and it seems like you're chomping at the bits here. So what's up?
Yeah, I love the multi-level marketing stuff. It's awesome. It's fun. So the one thing that I always say, and like anytime I do a nutrition seminar or any of this, and when people try to get my UFC guys on, you know, in particular Advocare, I want to choke them. The whole concept and the one big thing that I always say, if any diet is trying to sell you on drinking a shake instead of eating real food, like they don't have your health in mind. They have your money in mind, you know, and that's all they care about. Number one, like we have to look at that. Like we never would have someone do a supplement over real food. So if they're automatically telling you to supplement real food, you know, with their product, it's automatic BS. It's not even really worth diving into all the different reasons it is. And beyond that, man, you're trying to tell these people that they need these supplements to live a healthy lifestyle. And it's irresponsible. It's skipping steps. It's lazy. I have a lot of fundamental issues with it. Let's try to get people eating the way they should, eating good quality food, eating large amounts of it, getting them to recover, you know, surprise enough, the things that we teach. Let's get these people to do this and then tell me if they need these supplements added in their diet. You know, I just never see it. I never see a need for the things they're trying to sell if someone's doing all the things they should be doing anyway.
So essentially it's like, I mean, it's just pitching the shortcut, right?
Where, exactly. You know, for a lot of money. It's a very expensive shortcut.
Yeah. Leah, anything else on there?
No, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. I totally, all transparency, I'm actually part of a multi-level marketing company that has nothing to do with nutrition. So, because I was approached multiple times by various nutrition or supplement type companies that are in, I actually like MLM businesses. I think you can do really well with them, but none of the products that I was ever pitched for any like supplement company or nutrition or whatever company ever could make the cut for me. Like I just look at the, and maybe there was one or two things that was like, oh, this is all right. I mean, it's similar to something else I have, but I couldn't look through the whole gamut of what they were offering and find products that I wanted to sell. I can't, you know, I just couldn't advocate for most of them. So we've never done any kind of nutritional MLM, you know, Plexus or Avacare, any of that stuff, because they just don't make a good enough product. I mean, if there was a company that made a really great product and it was all, you know, then fine, sure, show it to me, but it's not, I just haven't found it yet, so.
And do you guys, I mean, you guys are still in the commercial gym business. Are you got people looking for shortcuts and everything like this? I mean, how do you kind of manage those people?
Yeah, I mean, it
happens. No, go, Tyler.
No, I was gonna say, like, we, you know, I sell some supplements. I sell, like, Driven Nutrition out of my gym, but at the same time, like, all of my people are well-educated in the fact that, hey, like, you know, you're eating how we should. You're eating how we should, like how we have you. You want to have some creatine? This is a creatine that I like. This is a protein for like an intra workout. It's all that, but there's you know, we're not selling them on these magic drugs. You know, one in particular, their golden boy product is caffeinated branched chain amino acids, and we're telling people to just put down their soda and drink this instead, and we're still giving them caffeine all day. So I see people, you know, 10 p.m. drinking their caffeinated BCAAs because a Diet Coke was bad for them. It's like, get out of here.
Yeah. And I mean, our people are still, we saw some products in the gym. I mean, we have a couple proteins and basic stuff like that, but nobody is, what's funny is most of our clients, actually, they don't know that we sell that stuff until way later into their experience at the gym, because we're talking about them to them about diet and stuff first. So they're fixing what they're eating, and then we introduce some of the supplements that I actually think can be helpful, like a protein. I mean, I take a creatine, we talk about that. But yeah, we don't have any magic, like go to sleep and you're going to wake up 10 pounds thinner drink or something like that.
Yeah. The biohack, man. Fuck.
Yeah. There's no biohack.
But and then I guess we'll just jump forward to the next question, because I know, Tyler, you got to get coaching here shortly. Guy's asking, my man, CMPC83. I'm going to click through, see if there's anything on this guy. What's his deal? Christopher, he likes music, coffee, wine, and lifting. Not bad. He wants to know if someone's looking to get more nutrition, like a nutrition certification or nutrition seminars, like what are you guys plugged into that stuff? What do you recommend? I guess, void of bullshit, and I guess any recommendations, obviously, besides the CrossFit football nutrition's portion of the seminar?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually in a program right now, or I just started a nutrition. The thing is that most of what we believe in nutritionally is not being pushed by your basic nutrition courses that you're going to find in college. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's really into nutrition and they're like, I really want to get into nutrition and maybe even get some kind of a degree or something, you are not going to find what you are looking for at a university, at a regular. There's two that I know of. One of them is University of Western States in Portland. They have a great program. It's a functional medicine type program, but it's friggin' like $20,000. And there's another one in California, I think. But there's a couple of really good certification programs out there. One of them that I'm doing right now is actually the Nutritional Therapy Practitioner Program. So the NTP program has bases. It's online, and then it has some weekend workshops. And it's much more functionally medicine based, a lot more, you know, whole foods, I would say power athlete style nutrition with kind of a little bit more of a medical-ish insert into a little more detail. And obviously still, you're not going to agree with everything that people say, but it's much more what we're kind of advocating, something like that. But it's hard to find. They are hard to find.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's with any certification or any opportunity to go and learn from somebody. You know, we had a guy at the seminar this weekend who was an Olympic lifter, true and true, right, Pim. And we just kind of used Bruce Lee's quote, like, empty your cup. Like, go in, you know, dump out everything you know and put it in a little sack and then tie it up and throw it in the bottom drawer and go in ready to learn. And then, you know, it's your responsibility then after that to align your personal philosophies. And like you said, Leah, you're not going to hear 100% everything you agree with, everything you want to hear. But, you know, that's the whole point, is you go through and you try to pick up your nugget, sharpen your blade, and just get better, right? So, Tyler, do you have anything to throw in there or no?
I was unfamiliar with the one that she mentioned. So, I mean, Leah's very, very intelligent with this stuff. So, if she's taking it, I'm sure that's a good one. Beyond that, though, I do agree with her. There's not much out there. I went to college for nutrition dietetics, and pretty much you're going to pay them a lot of money to force feed you information on how to give people diabetes with the government food guide pyramid. So it's just, you know, you're going to have to look at who's giving you this information and, you know, like, what's their agenda. I've until Leah mentioned that one, it sounds pretty good. I've not seen one that was really worth doing. Rob Wolf used to have a really good one at one time that was great, and that was good. And I'm sure there's still some stuff out there. But if you're just wanting to know for you, it's just something you're kind of interested in, like, just sign up for a nutrition consult. I'll tell you anything you want to know.
But I'm just going to take the opposite side here. A degree or a certification, and it could just kind of be the hook, the commonplace that a client is looking for,
uh-huh,
that could then get them to listen more to you and then the information you do provide. So you don't have to subscribe to whatever it is that they're teaching, but at the same time, it then you got nothing to lose.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You know that Tyler Mitten always sugarcoating everything. You guys get it? You get sugar? Hey, okay. And we just, one last question float in, guys. I think it's a pretty good one. This is from Andrew Welchel 54. He wants to know, do you have any nutrition advice for people who often find themselves working overtime awake for 24 hours or more? Nurses, law enforcement, military. He's currently on the leaning protocol, 3 meals a day. What should he consume macro-wise if he's working past the standard work hours and awake for nearly 24 hours? What do you guys think? Who wants to jump on?
Well, first off, like, if he has to do the 3 meals, then that's one thing. But if possible, I would try to move that to the 5 meals just to kind of spread that out a bit. That's going to do a lot of the work for him, just kind of having him, you know, already prepared for that. Beyond that, it, you know, depends on what that job actually is. If it's a pretty active job, he's still going to need a pretty balanced approach. I have nurses that sometimes have 24 hours, and we're going to give them a little bit more carbs throughout the night than my police officer who's basically in a car throughout the night. So, you know, my base recommendation, switch that to 5. If you still need more meals, look at exactly what it is you're doing in that 24 hours. If you're pretty active, just kind of maybe add, I would keep it on the lower end, but add a little bit to that through each macronutrient. If you're not really active, I would just kind of keep the carbs down a little bit and favor protein and fat a bit.
Roger that. Leah, anything else to jump on there?
No, I mean, that's tough. When I was in nursing school, I actually worked night shift for a semester when I was in labor and delivery. And it was funny because my preceptor, they called it, or the person who I was following, she didn't eat all evening. All night. She would eat dinner before she came, and she wouldn't eat again until she got off shift because she was afraid it would make her sleepy. And like, if she ate, she got tired and she didn't feel like she was going to do her job well, like watch the newborn strips and stuff. So obviously I didn't agree with it, but when I was working, we only had the opportunity to eat once because you had your break and that was it. So you, sometimes you got to do the three meals. And if you're up, like some of the guys that we have at the gym that do like fire that are on 24 or more, they tend to pretty much space their meals out just like they would during the day. They would eat, and if they're on for 24, they would do it, you know, they would still eat every 4 to 5 hours depending, because you're awake and you got to feed your brain and you know, keep yourself ready to go, especially in that situation. Specific macros is really hard to tell what, you know, what anybody would need without a consult. You definitely, I mean, getting like a meal plan type thing from us would be the only way that we could really do anything specific. But I think unless, like he said, you're super active, doing lower carb and more on the protein fat realm is probably a better idea, because you're going to be riding some cortisol wave anyway. And if you're doing like a ton of carbs and you're not really super active and you're up all night, like it's probably not going to work out real well as far as leaning. But yeah, again, specifics for that, it's, we really got to know like what your job is and how long you're doing it and all that stuff that comes with our meal plans. So if that's not, you know, what you got going on, then you're just kind of, some general advice, like space the meals out, don't go too crazy with the carbs and make the best of it.
Boom. There you go. And sleep like a motherfucker whenever you can.
Yeah, for real. Definitely. I used to get, seriously, it's crazy when you do night shifts and stuff. I would leave the hospital every time my shift was over. It was like, you know, 7:30 or whatever. And I had to drive by a Whataburger on the way home every time. And every fucking morning I was like, don't stop. You don't need any, because your cortisol, you're like all stressed from being up all night. And sometimes you had crazy deliveries and you're just like, I just want to eat a Whataburger and go to bed.
Yeah, just need that food hug.
Yeah. And it was, tough.
No, that's awesome.
Cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, honestly, guys, thanks for jumping on from nutrition stuff. You know, I'll pop back. I'll give you guys a ring too if we need anything else, but we'll talk to you later. All right.
Bye. Bye.
All right, Tex, what's our next one we got here going?
All right, so we have about three good questions that kind of flow together we can tackle with one single response. So this is from TDun14. Just strained my lower back. Words of advice for getting back on track. I've been lifting over 4 years now, but recently took a few weeks off and injured it squatting on the return to lifting. So let me jump at the other questions while, and let's make some connections for these guys. This is from Sheldonius. How do you guys address a pinch in the front of the hips during the squat, assuming the doctor has cleared the athlete? And then my boy Peter out in freaking Eastern Europe, do you guys have tricks and tips on how to survive sitting in a day in class all day? Mm-hmm. So these are all connected. All right. So just in terms of the injury and the lifting, I guarantee your mechanics were off somehow, some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you got back into it after some time off, then you just had a moment of weakness, a miscoordination, a misstep, and then that caused that tweak. So then we talk about mechanics, going to be that anterior pelvic tilt. That could have been the same issue. So if we're combining Sheldonius' question with 14s up top,
mm-hmm.
that anterior pelvic tilt, that people misconstrue the cue of push your hips back, right, is a killer.
Sure. And it can be, well, I mean, that front hip pinch, just speaking from personal experience before I was enlightened, can also be a quad issue. So if you're, even if you have anterior pelvic tilt, but you're sitting, you're squatting into your quads, that has in the past for me personally been what felt like a hip problem. And the fucking problem, Tex, was I wasn't sitting back into this fucking squat. It was just that simple. I would pitch forward and I would come up too far forward. And then all of a sudden I feel a pinch in my hip. So it's that anterior pelvic tilt. Fix that sucker. How are we going to learn how to fix it? Seesaw walk, dead bug, lunging. What else? I mean, all of our warm-up stuff, it comes back to resetting that default. And then just being sure you have the proper line of action. I guess what I would also tinker with that hip pinch deal is potentially width, right? Okay, so here's what happens. You got that neutral hip. It looks like they're sitting back, but all of a sudden, boom, they're getting a grab. Well, let's tinker with a wider, narrower stance. Toes forward, right? Make sure the knees are tracking over the instep. We're not excessively externally rotated. Knees aren't drifting outside the toe box, which would be like, imagine drawing a box around your feet in the outside of your feet. Yeah, we got to fix that. So then going into the sitting, right?
Mm-hmm.
K-Star has his Deskbound book, right? And I talked with Ant about it as well, just because I always like to bounce stuff off Ant because he's like us. He'll like try to find something to pick apart. And that's Anthony Lowe, the physio detective. But basically what K-Star gives you is cool little routines. If you're sitting down, to casually open your hips, right? External rotation. Some of it's realistic for being in a classroom setting. Some of it's not, because it's like fucking squatting on your chair and shit. Or maybe you can if you go in the back. I don't know.
But as long as you're paying attention.
Yeah, sure. But there's some external rotation stuff. But what it's missing, I guess, is the internal rotation drills. So just find ways to internally rotate as well, because it's not a bad thing as long as you're not fucking squatting a barbell for you to internally rotate with a bent knee. You know, go into the proverbial valgus knee position. Fucking internally rotate.
And you should take this approach all day. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, don't wait until you start to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So Peter's well versed in our dead bug, our Spider-Man and seesaw walk. So that should start your day. Mm-hmm. If you know that you got to freaking sit down for the next 8 hours or whatever it is, put yourself in an optimal position to go into just a relaxed state. And then, going back to class, I don't think a teacher would get mad if you just stood up and stood in the back. You're still dialed in, paying attention. You're just not desk bound.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be approach. So bottom line, just dead bug, right?
Yeah.
Mid class.
Yep.
On your desk.
There you go.
Nothing wrong with that.
What do we got next here, Tex?
I'm going to take a question here. I think I can turn it into a very educational experience. So we got this from Catcher's Heel. So how do you train a football defensive back from a lacrosse D midi? So guys, we're going to take the same approach to training both of these athletes. Recall that there is no such thing as sports specific training, right? The only thing that's sports specific is practice, talking about practice. So what we need to realize is that both of these athletes have similar kind of demands. Your job is to basically get in the way. You're preventing kind of a wide receiver getting off the line, just as if you're preventing a midi from getting to where they're supposed to be. We're calling back to our posture and position discussion earlier. So what we're going to do now is just break down the steps that are required for both of these. Lacrosse, you have the opportunity to get a hell of a lot more physical than a defensive back, you know, after 5 yards. So they have to be more precise and accurate in their approach to this. But what we're going to do is just kind of break down the steps. So sport, there are only 4 steps that athletes can ever do. And we talk about this at the CrossFit Football Seminar. The first is going to be a forward step. So imagine you're in your athletic position or your ready stance as a cornerback, and you want to step up and decrease that space between you and the wide receiver. You want to jam him up off the line. You're not going to do like a drop step. Not going to do a false step, a plyo step. You're just going to step forward and try to get to them. So forward step. It's also benefit lax midi. Then we have our open step. So that's where you kind of push off the trail foot and really open with the lead foot no matter what direction you're going. So this is going to benefit you if they're kind of running a slant. Or in lacrosse, this is going to benefit you if they're just trying to run or dodge to your right or left, the side. The next step we got is a crossover step. So this is imagine a wide receiver, he goes towards your right and all of a sudden changes across your body. You're going to have to perform a crossover step to get in a position to change the direction where he's going. So same deal with lacrosse. So a crossover step, that's going to be where you actively use your adductors to pull your body across. And then finally is that false step, that drop step, that plyo step that we discussed. So if we're able to take these both athletes, put in the same training session, and just practice these different steps and footwork from our athletic position or the DB starting position, then we're going to be in an optimal position to train both these athletes to be successful at their jobs and responsibility on the field. We wouldn't do anything different. Then they can take these tools, these 4 steps that they learned and mastered and practiced, and then learn how to use them specifically for their sport in practice. sports-specific training, right?
Yeah, the sports-specific application.
Application.
One might say.
The ass backwards.
Approach.
Approach. Ass. So, again, we're not going to look to get specific or jiggy with these guys. We're just going to train them the basic footwork, basic approach to front it, fucking getting in the way. So, Luke, here's a fun fact.
I'm listening.
Where I discovered my favorite coaching tool, where you're like, just don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite's to get in the way. And where I discovered this was just playing sport, you know. My job, I was middle linebacker football, and then defensive middie in lacrosse, responsibility, get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I had that revelation. Fun fact.
As an athlete. You
bridge
elite. The elite athlete to elite coach bridge is in between the ears of Tex McQuilkin.
Yeah. It was just making full body contact as a coach.
Mm. Do you make any other types of full body contact?
That's off the record. Different show. That's our other podcast that we talk about.
Yeah, the Dirt and Skirt podcast.
Dirt and Skirt?
I'm dirt, your skirt, obviously.
So you can post questions for Dirt and Skirt on our Instagram account.
Is it available?
Just hit tag Luke California.
So what do we got next, Tex?
I hit my flow state again. I blacked out.
All right, so how about this? I'll take Casey Foot. So this is another guy following Grindstone. Let's see. What about a squat program to be done in addition to other work similar to the speed program? So you want to supplement with more squatting. Why? Okay, so assumption. My squat is weak, and I need to do more squatting to get better at squatting. Right? Maybe? Is that, like, let's go with that vein. Let's just say my man Casey Foot has some, you know, some numbers in mind.
He feels like he can do more.
Okay.
So he's not pushing himself
mm-hmm.
or overloading to where he, you know, feels he needs recovery.
Well, here's my concern. If you're on Grindstone, it's probably because you have a busy schedule. If you can handle a program that has more squatting in it, you should be following Field Strong. Right? Is that not an acceptable answer, though? We are not going to come out with likely. I can't think of a scenario to support. And listen, first off, let me also tell you that my first answer isn't always the one that I stick with as I talk myself through these things. So, Tex, you can fucking attest to this after various debates at like dinner and shit.
Yeah.
That's
because I always stop your argument, and then you have to think of another one.
Uh-huh. Maybe. That might be it. That might be what you're doing. But I can't think of a reason that we would have a squat-specific program just to get better at squatting. I mean, squatting twice a week it should be enough, you know? And here's the thing is everything's fucking connected, right? So while we break out our primals into squat, step, lunge, like it's all about strengthening your hip girdle and building the tensile strength through your trunk. Believe it or not, when you're doing pull-ups, my man, you're strengthening your ability to rack a bar on the upper back during your squat. You know what happens when you're doing your dumbbell rows? Maybe you should take all the other shit you're doing as seriously as you would on a squat program and see if that fucking carries through, because it should. It's all connected. So with that said, man, I don't think we're going to have like some sort of hatch squat or some fucking secret squirrel squat program. But hey, who the fuck knows? I know we have some in our arsenal that we've tried and tinkered with, but the problem is it takes away from the other components of training because it's fucking hard to squat 4 days a week. But I guess, I don't know, Tex, what do you think? You want to battle on this or what?
Yeah, sure. Here's what I would do. I would lunge and step up the other two lower body primal movements.
Uh-huh.
But we would take the approach of the posterior dominance, which you'll see in our step-up video. If you haven't already, check it out. So that's actively using your hamstring and your butt cheeks to pull yourself through space. And we want to take that again with lunging to where we're stepping in kind of that wide base, that train tracks athletic position, dropping the back hip flexor. So we're opening up the rear hip flexor, loading the front hamstring, and then pulling ourself through in a lunge. This then prepares you unilaterally to connect both legs bilaterally for the squat, in which you push your butt back, posterior chain dominant squat, and then from our experience and our stance, posterior chain squatting will then lead to more explosivity, which then leads to more power, which then leads to more numbers.
But explosivity isn't a word.
What are you talking about?
What I just said is what I'm talking about.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time we would make up words on this show.
Well, you are trying to get all sorts of words to stick. Condo.
Punishment. Uh-huh. All the words that have stuck.
Yeah, it's a pity stick.
A pity stick.
Yeah. Got to give you something. Let's barrel forward for Blake, my man Blake. This will be kind of a cool one. What are some barbells that you guys would recommend getting? I guess the ones that we – first off, I got fat bar. I think everybody should have a fat bar. Bamboo bar, that's a fun little device, right, Tex? You want to talk about how good you are at that? I'll tell them, not good at all. Well, I'm the fucking man.
After you continue, you go through your list of bars, then we can go back and talk about the purpose.
Okay, fine. Fat bar, bamboo bar, I fucking love the football bar, like the Swiss bar. And I would probably, you know, we just have basically the three grip, neutral grip, mm-hmm. but there's also the one, like the five grip offset grips. So I would probably tinker with that one too. There was another one I said when we were talking about
camber.
A camber bar. Yeah, I'm going to withdraw that and go safety squat. So let's talk those four bars. So
safety
I think
squat for a bench press. Is this a bench press?
No, it's not a bench
press. In my mind, I'm only thinking bench press.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, so I think those would be fucking solid. Solid set of bars.
But you should understand the purpose that each one of them. They're trying to drive a specific approach, mm-hmm. adaptation to the lifts. Mm-hmm. So you have mm-hmm. to understand each bar first before you just go all freaking credit card on them.
Right. So here's what I would do. Here's why you get a fat bar, reverse curls. Here's why you get a safety squat bar.
Reverse curls. Front squats, right?
Yeah.
We've been playing with the front squat safety bar.
Yeah.
It's fucking hard.
Yeah, it's legit. So you can front squat with that sucker and back squat with it. So the safety squat bar has the one with the big pads and also has a slight camber to it. They vary in camber based off of and the camber is like where the end of the bar kind of bends out of the center portion of the bar. So what that's going to do is going to force you to really concentrate and focus on a big upright back. During your squats, and then during the front squat, it's pretty cool because it changes. I mean, you got to change your grip up. It's also good for guys who have like elbow and shoulder issues and helps them like fucking stay in really good position. Like Ingo, who's one of our buddies, he's got a fucked up elbow and shoulder from tons and tons of volleyball. So safety squat can really help him keep a nice upright position versus spreading his hands all the way down to the fucking end of the barbell, you know what I mean? Like, so that can help just with some good position, and it makes it easier to do more of a genie squat in a front squat. But it just kind of pushes your torso around a little bit, right? And it really, really helps build that and test that tensile strength and forces you to stay back in your squat, right?
Those huge abdominals.
Yep. So, then we go into the fat bar. I just think the fat bar is fun for fucking around, field strength, grip strength type stuff, right? Honestly, do reverse curls with them. Push press, power cleans. Let's see, what else are we tinker with? Well, in terms of the fat bar, strict pressing with it too. Like, let's say you got a guy, I'm just trying to think. So there's reasons to use it for deficiencies, you know what I mean? But then there's otherwise just reasons to make it fucking suck, right? But let's say you're a guy with like a shoulder or wrist problems or elbow. I've had, when we had the gym, we'd have guys vertical press with a fat bar and it would alleviate that stuff. Right. That football bar is legit for like neutral grip bench press, incline, flat, decline.
Oh yeah. Incline.
And for like a nice close narrow grip, and it, you know, you have a neutral grip on there. So again, guys with shoulder, elbow, wrist issues tend to, perform better on these bars. And by perform, I don't mean I kind of mean put up bigger numbers, but they don't, the physical issues don't become a barrier for them. Right. So like Jim Wendler, when he was on a few, that must be months ago when he was on, he talked about how he has certain bars that he works with because these are the ones that don't fucking hurt, because Wendler is a fucking battle-hardened dude, right? So he wants to keep on training and keep progressing. He might not need to vary the implement. And then our bamboo bar is a very fucking pliable bar where you strap up typically kettlebells, center mass bells, small plates, whatever, with bands, and it really teaches you how to use, again, Anthony Lowe, learn how to match tension to task in the bench press and overhead stability and things like that. Because if you give too much tension, that fucker will shake you around. If you don't give enough, it lands on your throat and you get fucking stapled to the bench like my man Tex McQuilkin, right? But if you're
too much tension. You should have said it earlier, not let too little.
Oh, listen, irrelevant. Because if you're
it's very relevant.
Machine like me, you just fucking smash. You keep up with and that big Jay Welly.
You've had a lot of opportunity to use it.
Dude, I'm basically natural. I tried.
There's no such thing as a natural.
Listen, John Wellborn is a 6'8", 350-pound giant who can chew nails and spit bullets, right? He can palm a medicine ball. And I go fucking toe-to-toe with him on bamboo bar. And his job for 10 years was to bench press fucking 350-pound men, slamming their bodies into him. That's who I am. I'm Luke Summers. What's up?
that's a great intro that you use at the CrossFit Football Seminar. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what a bamboo bar is out there.
Oh, yeah. That's a bummer.
But, so, task to specific tension, this is great to learn how to apply that, which then can carry over to anytime you're doing upper body plyometrics, lower body plyometrics, because the more relaxed you are, the more powerful you're going mm-hmm. to be mm-hmm. to turn on, turn off. So it just is a necessary opportunity that you can't get in the floor press, you can't get in the bench press, and then it's great for just fucking over-courageous individuals and athletes like myself. Get dialed in.
Boom. Are there any other bars that you can think of, Tex?
You can get jiggy with the different movements. You can go a single arm, a little single arm.
Yeah, there's a whole different set of creativity things you can do with any fucking bar. Like, it's just a standard bar, right? Yeah.
So,
but I'm trying to think of all the tools that we have out there. We just got the Duffalo, so we're going to be messing around with that. John fucking pulled the trigger on the Duffalo bar, and that came last week. So, all right. How about we barrel forward? What do you say?
All right. Here's a question from TH636. When are we going to get power athlete performance polos? And this is something I've been asking for years.
Are you asking me?
I'm just saying, just reiterating, this is a need.
Listen, Tyler, okay? I don't know when we're going to get it. Honestly, I don't know even if that would sell. Why would you even want that stupid thing, bro? I'm a t-shirt all day.
Got to go to conferences, man.
Yeah. Well, listen, why does Tyler need it? That's what I want to know. I see why you need to fucking strap on the high school football coach's uniform.
Yeah, just get a medium.
Khaki shorts, New Balance shoes, and a fucking medium performance polo.
Not buttoned up and no undershirt. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we could do that. I'll have to run it by the apparel fucking gatekeeper. But odds are you're probably not going to get it. Anyways, Tex, let's pop off a couple more and then let's call it a show. What do you say?
All right. So we got Dr. Jewett here. Honestly, is there anything wrong? Is there any wrong way to do curls?
Oh, in the fucking squat rack. Oh,
you're not wrong.
I'm fucking, dude, listen, I'll tell you what. I curl our squat rack all the time. It's just if you're curling in somebody else's squat rack, that's when it becomes a problem, right? I don't think so. Let's see. I'm trying to think of just a wrong way to do it. Maybe underwater?
Yeah, that's good. That's definitely reaching. But, I mean, if you're watching that Speedo commercial, that's going to be the new phase of training. It's getting rid of eccentrics, but those dumbasses don't understand the necessary eccentric. What I'm thinking here is that the only wrong way is if you only do one way.
Yeah, so good point.
If you only rely on hammer curls or if you only rely on that palm up. So try to hit just all planes of motion. If you think about just every angle at a pronation and supination that you have the ability to execute, hit that in your curls.
Mm-hmm. With weights, bands.
Weights,
chains.
With chains, bells,
whistles, yo-yos.
You can even rotate while you're curling.
find different ways. You can do even holding a bicep curl and doing radial ulnar rotations. These are great if you're a boxer fighter or you're having any elbow issues to kind of really break up and maintain stability through all planes of motion. Let's see. What else? You see anything else?
Yeah, I got one. Right. Favorite warm-up. This is from the Strength Battalion. And then he's got a little business question here.
Favorite warm-up. I'm sticking with the classic IT band slow twist and kick.
But I would say the whole our whole fucking what we're dreaming up on twist bend.
What twist twisty bendy?
Yeah, but wait, there was another word in there. The twist bend something. Twist bend primal? Was that what it was? And our twist bend primal fucking movement flows. Where like
so you're thinking about I'm thinking of only a single movement, but you're thinking of a whole package.
Yeah. Warm up.
Okay. Ooh, what did we get jiggy with in creative?
We actually added a press to the IT band slow twist and kick.
Yeah.
Version 3.
Uh-huh.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, be on the lookout for some crazy training. What, Germany? That's our next international
trip. Yeah, maybe we'll get some twist bend primal in there.
Yeah, throw a video together, throw that up there.
Yeah, so keep on looking there, fucking Strength Battalion, if that is your real name, Steven Randall. And then he asks, well, go ahead.
So I'm going to throw one more out there.
Okay.
My favorite warm-up, I'm going to go with our sprint preparation sequences.
Okay.
That you can find on our Power Athlete Speed program.
Yes, fair enough.
Which is available through Train Heroic.
Oh, no big deal. People, you know, we've been talking about the Speed program quite a bit here. Why don't we just give a little promo on the Speed program?
Yeah, okay. That'll give you the opportunity to then see the value.
All right, so here's the deal, people. Watch out for the link in the show notes here. So go to powerathletehq.com, find this episode, go to that Train Heroic link, and you're going to enter coupon code PAPPAS, P-A-P-P-A-S, in all caps, PAPPAS, P-A-P-P-A-S. That's going to get you 10% off of that sprint program. Basically, how this program works is you click it and drag it on your Train Heroic calendar. You have it for a year, right? So you fucking cycle on and on and on and on all you want. This sucker's an 8-week speed program that's guaranteed to work somehow. Guaranteed to be delivered?
Yeah, here's why. It's going to attack the two biggest limiting factors for speed. It's going to attack flexibility and then mechanics. So again, the opportunity to really break that shit down and then attack your limiting factors. Do not accept being slow. Being slow is worse than being mediocre.
And ugly.
But some of us can't help that.
Are you, what are you saying?
She's talking about my friend.
PAPPAS.
PAPPAS.
P-A-P-P-A-S, all caps, people, so be sure you're hitting up these show notes. But you know what? The Barbell Strength dude, my man, says he uses PayPal. He's got a business question. PayPal to bill clients. Any issues or suggestions otherwise? Okay, so I'm assuming you're in – so you're Strength Battalion, so you're fucking – you're lifting weights for people. The deal with any sort of credit card processing, they're going to be in that little like 2-3% until you get some serious fucking volume. And honestly, you're far, far, far away. So honestly, whatever works for you, let it rip. Or you go to what we ended up doing is going to a platform like Train Heroic, who manages the fucking credit card processing, but also provides you with value add shit like fucking, you know, statistics and tracking and like all sorts of analytics for your athletes, right? So for like a micro gym and micro business owner where you have athletes that you can memorize, this is a super, super powerful thing because then you can show them that your training is working. They can log it. It gets you a fucking app. So you are you're a modern provider. But all those feature sets are going to cost you. But it should – who's going to be fucking benefiting from the feature sets? It should cost them as well. So I wouldn't expect you to like go to a platform like that and absorb the costs. And I don't know if it would be a hard sell for you to pitch your clients on, but that's what I would recommend because I truly think that those feature sets and adding on it, like these little fucking things, people love that shit, dude. I know I fucking love it. So you just got to kind of scratch the itch. If your people are writing in notebooks now and like they're losing their notebooks or some shit like that, dude, if people want an app, like go hit up Train Heroic and get your fucking business on there. It's a no brainer. They handle all that shit for you. And then you have all the tracking and analytics and stuff too. I mean, that's what I would fucking do. And, you know, if you have a brick and mortar gym, you have big or maybe not big, but you have screens up that have leaderboards that have the workout of the day, all that shit. Like it's built for you. It's a no brainer. But in terms of like, if you're like, hey man, I just want to get credit card processing, done, everything's going to be a fraction of a point away from one another, whether or not you're using, like a Stripe, an Authorize.net, a Braintree, like all this shit is relatively the same stuff for an enterprise your size of like, you know, a dozen or so members. I don't know. So there's my recommendations on that. I don't know if that helps. And then there's a couple more I have here, Tex.
Okay.
We're fucking barreling forward. I feel like we're getting
But I think they just keep getting more and more and more.
I know. Did you see the ones that are just popping up now?
Yes.
Sons of bitches. All right. So, Tex, this might be – I don't know where this one's going to go, but I'm jumping in.
Not the drown-proofing.
No, it's not the drown-proofing. Gordon Grimm, what would you consider to be the minimum effective dose for an average Joe to see noticeable gains in strength, power – I'm sorry, strength, speed, and athleticism. Could power athlete protocols be useful for said average Joe compared to other CrossFit or other fitness modalities? The minimum effective dose for an average Joe to see noticeable gains. See, my
here's the bottom line is you have to stress to progress.
Right.
If you are just going through the motions or just showing up and then it's a walkabout almost in the gym, you are not going to see any results.
But I don't like the terms like noticeable gains. I don't like that. Like noticeable gains to who? Right? And speed,
amount strength, of tacos you can
speed,
eat.
And athleticism. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you about like if athleticism is truly a goal of yours, which is being the most economical and fucking gifted mover out there and making things look effortless, right? Adapting quickly to new stimulus and stuff like that. Most CrossFit gym, like if you go to a CrossFit gym or CrossFit box, most of the programs will really struggle to facilitate an adaptation of athleticism. And let me tell you why. And this is a learning moment that we have with a lot of the people who come to CrossFit football seminars.
Okay.
It's by the very nature of class and group training. Most gym spaces probably occupy close to 60 to 70% of floor space with barbell stations, right? Stations, like you have clients in a certain rate and they have their own workout radius, right?
Their bubble.
And they're gonna be transitioning to potentially like a wall ball pull up or whatever you're gonna fucking program, right? Here's the thing about that. The best way would be to have them fucking transfer as fast as possible. But could you imagine someone like busting off a barbell, turning open step, fucking burst to the wall and then getting hit by a barbell? Like you just can't have this nonlinear free movement that's required to develop athleticism in a fucking bubble. Like that's it. Now but the goal of CrossFit isn't athleticism, it's fitness. So those programs will get people fit as fuck in the best shape of their lives if they do it right. And there's shitty idiot CrossFit owners too, you know, who don't get it right, but there's a lot of coaches who get it right. So I say this because I think I can say this confidently, Tex. We travel the world working with primarily people who have followed CrossFit for multiple years and high-level CrossFitters, and they struggle to display the traits of athleticism. But they're in some of the best, they're people that are much fitter than I will ever be, right? So I guess with that said, the minimum effective dose would have to be programming that promotes the athleticism. And an average Joe can improve athleticism. And I think they should, dude. I think that should be a goal, just like fitness. And they're kind of, they're intertwined, man, because to do more and more complex tasks, you have to increase GPP. And increasing GPP is increasing your fitness, right? So with that said, 2 days a week. 1 day a week?
Of the speed program? I'll keep
it down. No, like of, I mean, what do you think? You should be training fucking... Minimum effective dose. I'm going to say it's 2 days a week.
Minimum effective dose, but it's always going to increase.
You continually progress.
Yes.
Right? And find a way to progress. And one of those
you stress need to forms. Be more efficient with your time and your stress, the more planes of motion you move through.
Mm-hmm.
Or the more complex new tasks mm-hmm. that you attack. So all of the warm-up series and the shit that we do.
Yeah.
that will be the fastest way to accelerate the adaptation and then continue down your athletic continuum, athleticism continuum, mm-hmm. at a faster rate.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the 2 days comes from Science and Practices. I just remember that number sticks out to me. So that's my source. I'm citing my source.
But if you're doing a routine, you're not progressing. Mm-hmm. So there's no such thing as a routine.
So there you go. That's kind of a good discussion. That's a good question. And then he has another question. I'm scrolling, guys. Sorry about this. About, you know, what are some recommended pieces of equipment for like a garage gym guy, right? What equipment do you promote / recommend for a home gym? What are the bare essentials? Okay, so here's the Olympic barbell, bumper plates, and steel plates ranging up to 500 pounds, hopefully, right? A rack to squat out of, right? Or blocks. I guess you could squat off blocks.
Yeah.
And then use adjustable blocks for various shits. A pull-up, something to do pull-ups on. Doesn't have to be a fucking fancy pull-up bar. Like anything. You know,
your backyard.
Yeah. The convenience of a perfectly level fucking pull-up bar is nice, but you could fucking...
You got a balcony?
Pull up on
apartment?
It. Yeah. Pull up on an I-beam, right? Double overhand, switch grip, neutral grip. So something to do vertical pulls on. I would also get adjustable dumbbells, right? So
old school Sorinex.
Yeah, like the old school Sorinex adjustables, or even just like a plate loaded dumbbells. Fuck, I don't give like anything, because you want to have anything, everything from probably like you can get sassy with 5 pound dumbbells, right? Mm-hmm. For like a vertical support in a Captain Morgan, and then you probably need to go up to 150. So you need dumbbells from 5 to 150. Well, I do, not Tex. Well, you don't touch those Gorilla Cookies, do you?
Only for snatches.
Oh. Slam ball, sandbag.
I would say sandbag over slam ball.
Yeah, okay, because you could just slam a sandbag.
Yeah, and I would even opt for like just a hard D-ball.
Yeah.
8 pounds that you can just get fucking whipping around athletic and creative with, throwing it everywhere.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot.
Lighter's going to be better with a med ball.
Yeah, because
and then go heavy with the sand.
Talking with Ed Cosner on the earlier podcast, there's going to be some heavy med ball influence coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So just going back to the med ball GPP stuff, what else are we missing? Oh, you need some fucking like bands, right? You need
mini bands. The Jack Street
pull-down bands. Okay. Both some for some like, you know, for banded walks and shit like that. Cause those are fucking $6, dude. Everybody should have those.
Yeah.
Right. You should get, and then some like, some jump bands or whatever they're called, for like tricep pushdowns and banded good mornings. Let's see. That's a pretty good setup there.
Yeah. And space.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking sprint.
Somewhere to sprint. Yeah. Oh, a fucking sled. Prowler. What are you thinking? You're not feeling it?
Bare essentials?
Dude, okay, fine. I won't. Then no.
You got a wall?
Wall
you,
drill.
You can do the wall drill in mm-hmm. place of a prowler. But if you got the means,
yeah,
look and get that in.
So bare essentials, yeah. I'm trying to think of what else. That's pretty good. I think you probably want an Airdyne or air bike. I think that's an essential. I really do.
You don't use the one here.
Well, I'm not. I got fucking VersaClimber.
Not essential.
Yeah. Well, Liz, first off, Tex, Mr. fucking narc me out for not conditioning. Okay, man. I'm just taking a little break from the old condo. All right? I've got a lot of things going on here.
Well, we do have a condo cycle coming up that we have to test for Field Strong. So that'll be.
Yes. So, anyways, that's pretty fucking stellar setup, man. Mm-hmm. That's what I would go with. But, all right. Anything else, Tex? Should we try and pop any of these other ones off? No? All right. It's been a long day. We're still a little jet lagged here, people. But thank you. Thank you for tuning in to Power Athlete Radio, the Crew episode. Hopefully we empowered you with the information to make you a better coach, athlete, or human being overall. So a couple announcements coming up. We're coming up to the last couple certs of the year. I think I'm going to try and get something going over by Double D.
Kansas?
Yeah.
All right.
So somewhere over there in the middle of the country, then we're probably going to go to Sweden. And I think that's it for the year, homie.
So Rome, Germany, Philadelphia.
Yep.
Kansas, Sweden.
Yes. And then we have the Power Athlete Symposium here in SoCal. That's going to be fucking killer. And then keep your eyes out too. Keep your eyes peeled on our Instagram, Power Athlete HQ Instagram, spelled out that way, for our Toes Forward competition. This is fucking killer. We got giveaways from Sorinex, RX Bar, fucking Gators, MWOD. Dude, Skull Candy has these sick earbuds and this sick jam box. Caveman Coffee's kicking in some goods. Train Heroic's kicking in some goods.
And how do we participate?
It's easy, dude. So you're going to hear about it on Monday, the 5th of September. You take a bitchin' picture of you just standing there, toes forward. Right? Toes forward is the best way that we know to produce force in every fucking plane of motion through every primal.
And reduce force.
And it's also how we fucking tackle all of life's ups and downs, Tex. There's your force. You like that? So keep an eye out there, dude, because there's going to be one lucky winner that's taking away all this shit. It's literally getting shipped off, and we're pitching in a bunch of gear. Oh, Matt Vincent and Hate Brand Goods, they're pitching in a bunch of cool shit too. Like, this is killer, guys. Toes forward. It's super easy. Take it, snap a pic, hashtag toes forward, and then you're going to fucking get it. Dude, some lucky asshole out there is getting basically, I pick the prize pack that I want. So if you're anything like me and you like legit shit, you're going to love this fucking thing.
And I challenge you to be creative. Mm-hmm. So don't just do the old wood floor, toes forward, barefoot, mm-hmm. hobbit feet that mm-hmm. I would do. I want you to get out somewhere amazing in the world and point those toes forward.
No shit. Andy Stump sent one from fucking Switzerland, about to jump off a big old fucking cliff in his wingsuit. It's going to be pretty hard to top.
You got
to
top that.
But, dude, fucking challenge is on. See if you're throwing on those Vans. See what kind of kicks you got. Are you a nano guy? Nanos are the Birkenstocks of
nanos. Here's a theory that Luke and I have from observation at many events and traveling the world, is going to be that social nanos. So out at the bars are the new socks with sandals.
Uh-huh.
Because we don't see that anymore. Mm-hmm. But what we do see are a shit ton of nanos.
That's right. But that's it, Tex. I got fucking nothing else, man. This is a good one.
Yeah. We got world travels coming up and some exciting guests that we're booking. So,
people,
infotaining coming up.
Don't forget about it. Speed program. Pappas. Give me two. And that is it for Power Athlete Radio. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Wade's Army's 5th annual Wade's Day campaign has officially kicked off. From now until November 12th, we will be honoring the brave pediatric cancer patients battling neuroblastoma, a tumor derived from immature nerve cells. For 2016, we're embracing their valor and highlighting their nerves of steel. Join the fight against neuroblastoma and help us reach our goal of fundraising $125,000. Enlist today at wadesarmy.org by clicking the Donate Now badge and claim your limited edition Wade's Army uniform. Every Army needs a uniform. Until next time, bye!
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.